Hey, it's Bethane and Bethany, and this is the Don't Kegel Chronicles podcast, the show where we talk about pelvic health, women's health, mom life, and a lot about sex.
It's definitely one of our favorite topics. You'll hear from us, two pelvic health experts and the owners of Arkansas Pelvic Health, and interviews with other powerful women and dudes that support us.
Welcome back to the Don't Kegel Chronicles podcast with Bethany and Beth Ann. Today we're talking about C-sections. So this idea actually stemmed from one of our team meetings.
Yes, and they just had a lot of questions and they were like, can y'all just do a podcast on C-sections? And it's perfect timing because I, Beth Ann, and I'm actually about to have one in like 20 days.
20 days, that's Woo! Her second one. So we have team meetings once a month and we are going over birth prep stuff and then prepping for a section and also recovery from a section. And so we're giving them these like professional tips. And then we each had some like, oh yeah, but in mine and in mine, these like personal things. And they said, could you just like tell us all about it?
Yes.
So that's what we're doing today.
So we figured we would talk about each of our sections and talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, and then give you tips to prep and give you tips for recovery and all the things above.
Yeah. So both of us have had vaginal deliveries and both of us have had a cesarean. And so I feel like we can come at this professionally, but also personally, which honestly, I feel like makes me a better therapist.
For sure.
I had a C-section in 2019. It was elective, so not emergent. And I chose to do that because I had a previous delivery that was a shoulder dystocia. Google that if you want, but basically it's a pretty traumatic vaginal birth. And I just decided, your girl, not doing that again.
No.
And so I talked to my doctor about it. We planned it out. And that helped, obviously. Number one, if you have an elective section, it's already a little bit better than emergent because it's just not as traumatic. And here's a little tip here. Not all vaginal deliveries are perfect and not all C-sections are terrible and the worst and, you know, traumatic, I guess.
Yeah.
So mine ended up being pretty ideal. We did a different protocol so that I could walk as soon as possible afterwards and so that I didn't have to have opioids. And, you know, it was just like very... honestly relaxing. I think I'm a planner girly, so I knew I'm not going to have a traumatic vaginal delivery check. I already feel great about that. And then I got to have it with my doctor, so that was nice too, because sometimes you just don't get your doctor for delivery. And I remember, I think I felt the most nervous like walking into the OR. I didn't expect to walk in. I don't know what I thought would happen, but being able to walk in into the OR and then immediately, you know, they're just starting to drape you and things. It's a surgical team, but not your doctor.
Right.
And I was like, this is so weird that I'm almost naked laying in the middle of this very white and bright room and everyone just acting like it's normal to have a naked woman laying on a cold table in the middle of a room. And then I had to like tune into that. Oh, this is very normal for them. Oh, right. Yeah. That's why they're acting like it's normal.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they do it every day.
Right. So, like, my feet were draped, I think, and my shoulders were draped and everything else. I mean, I'm sure my chest was draped. I can't quite remember. I just remember thinking, like, wow, my vulva's out in the air right now.
Yes, it was. Because then they come and put the catheter in, and I was like, oh, they just literally just bent up my legs after my epidural, like, after I was sitting there.
Yeah. So, but once, like... once my doctor came in, he was like, how are you doing? I was like, good. He was like, you're doing better than your husband. So my husband was like pretty nervous in the hallway. And my section was like pretty seamless, nothing drama. Baby needed a little bit of help, but he was big. And so like we knew pretty much it was going to be healthy and easy. And some things I got to control, of course, because I knew it, were the drugs that they used. I didn't want opioids. And then also I asked for no drape or the lowest possible. And that made me feel more a part of it. Same. I remember just seeing pictures. I've watched videos of C-sections. And I was like, man, it just kind of feels like they're separate from it. Mm-hmm. So my drape was lowered to the lowest place and you still can't see much because it's like big old belly, you know, but you know, it made me feel a part of what was happening. And then I had asked if I could do skin on skin in the OR, which I think actually now is pretty normal. 4 years ago it wasn't. I don't think that it was like the most common, but we, you know, I was able to nurse in the OR. And then I remember saying, I think actually Steven said, he's like, man, it's kind of bright in here. And so they just like turned the lights off.
Yeah.
They lowered the little surgical lamp and then they raised the drape. And so while they were like suturing, they, you know, turned the lights off. And it was just like a pretty great experience. Of course, I had pain after that. I had Steven doing some fascial work, literally still in that room before they transferred to postpartum. And then I was able to get up and walk at about 12 hours. And I think now you can walk at 5 to 6 hours depending on your protocol. So that's pretty cool. But I had a really great experience. I think it gave me some power because when you have a vaginal delivery that's not ideal, it kind of gave me back some of that. And I didn't have the fears associated. Although C-sections are still like kind of scary. They're literally cutting into your abdomen while you're awake.
Literally awake.
And that is just a trip. My husband's been to the urologist recently to discuss a vasectomy, and they were like, gave him the option for sedation or not.
Yes.
And I was like, bruh, I had a baby taken out of my abdomen.
He was immediately like, I'm gonna need
without that. Opioids and awake. I feel like you could do this without sedation.
He's okay, like, but, I don't but know. In our homie's defense, I don't know. Listen, in the homie's defense, the one time he cut his finger and passed out from the sight of blood.
Yeah, like, that's true.
He's just not you.
Yeah, like he, that's true.
And so I think sedation is the way to go for
him. See what happens with that. But anyway, I had a great experience. Yeah. And so I like talking to patients about getting ready for the OR. I'll like tell them kind of what it looks like so they can, you know, just start knowing that. So it's not a shock, and tell them kind of what happens and what's typical and things that they can control. And that ultimately a C-section isn't bad, right? Because there's a lot of like, you know, even me, like mine was elective. I felt very strongly about it. It was based in evidence too. When you look up shoulder dystocia, it's like you're more likely to have it if you've had it before. And I was like, no thanks.
No.
Right. So I felt very strongly in it, and it was shared decision making. Mm-hmm. And people were like, are you sure it wasn't just like they had to get back to work? And I was like, literally, I wanted this.
Yeah.
So, you know, and people, sometimes people say the easy way out, which in my experience, my personal experience, my vaginal deliveries were harder. Of course, there was some trauma there. So my C-section was a bit easier, but that's not everyone's experience. And I certainly don't think a true surgery cutting into your abdomen is easy. And I think it was only easy for me because of my job.
Yeah.
Right? Like if I was a mechanic and had car trouble all of a sudden is easy, right? Like our toilet just leaked recently. And if I was a plumber, that situation's easy for me.
Yeah.
And like being a pelvic floor therapist and helping people post-op and, you know, after deliveries, like, you know, my recovery, I was set up for success. Also, I live with a PT, right?
Literally, so like, It's a little bit different.
I had every privilege in that, right? A PT staying with me in the hospital.
Yeah.
I am a PT. I had some prep work. So mine was, you know, I felt set up for success. And so I try to set my patients up for success too. Even my ones that are coming in for like birth prep vaginally, unless they specifically ask, do not talk to me about a section, because I will not push that boundary. I want to say, you know, if like you're mapping out a trip, right, a vacation, and you know where you're stopping and where you're staying, but like what if there's like a roadblock, right? you have to take an alternate route, I want to like prep you for that,
right,
just so you still have some power and some control in that situation.
Yeah.
And then we could talk about post-op later, but let's hear about your C-section.
So, you know, what's interesting is that Bethany and I has very different experiences, but I had already been on hospital bed rest. So my delivery was in 2021, which was COVID. And so I had been on hospital bed rest, put there because I had oligohydramnios, which is no amniotic fluid, in shock, like in a moment of like leaving an ultrasound, hey, you're not leaving the hospital.
Right. From like, she went in for a normal,
normal 35 like, week appointment. And Bethany just happened to go with me because I just had this feeling. I was like, I just need someone to be in this appointment with me. And Chris was on an airplane. And so I just happened to ask the question if the baby was still breech. And she was like, oh, let's go check. And she was like, when is Chris returning? And I was like, Thursday. She was like, no, he's going to come back today. So then like immediately it was this whole like shock situation of like, wait, I'm not leaving the hospital. My husband's on an airplane. We can't get a hold of him. Like, I didn't know what was happening. And turns out, sweet little Emma was IUGR, because I think most of y'all know I really struggle with HD or hyperemesis during pregnancy. And so I really struggle staying nourished. And so I just, my body was like, we are done with this.
Right. So IUGR is intrauterine growth restriction.
Which is super common with HD. And
just a little,
the oligohydramnios, also a very common factor. So just a little roadblock, as Bethany just discussed. And so after being on hospital bed rest, I had another scan at like 36. And my doctor essentially was like, if this one is not good, we've got to get this kid out. And it was horrible. Like the baby was measuring like so far behind. And I was like, okay. So mine was more of an emergent situation of like, you have to have the section because your frank breech, which it's like Emma came out and her toe was in her eye, so she was folded over like a pancake. and I had no fluid, so there was no, like, flipping action that was going to happen.
Have you ever had a folded pancake?
No, right? Yeah, it's like a taco almost.
Yeah, that's taco.
Taco. What is it? Like, folded pancake with, like, sausage or bacon in
right.
it.
I've never had that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would mix my savory and sweet.
No, I need you to mix that because it was so delicious.
But so Beth Ann's was like a more emergent, but not necessarily like, not the baby's heart rate's
right,
bad.
Right, not like a D-cell situation where I'm like pushing vaginally. It wasn't like that. It was just like, oh, we're taking this kid today. And I think it was a super stressful situation because and I know this is like protocol, like NICU team comes in and the whole time they were like, the baby will be with us probably like a month. And because on the scans, Emma was just measuring so far behind that they were like, the baby may weigh 4.5 pounds.
Well, and you're white and your husband's white.
Correct. So, and we didn't know what we were having also.
Right. And so knowing that this is an early baby, traditionally white boys have the weakest lungs, white girls, I think, are the next weakest.
It's like, I think they're second behind.
Is it like girl? It's like
girl, girl, boy, then boy. Yeah.
But like African-American, white, African-American, white. Right. So like an African-American girl has the strongest lungs and a white boy has the biggest
Charlotte
lungs.
Rose Travis.
Yeah. So like knowing that you're early.
Yeah. It was just white a very child. Stressful situation because no one in the room knew what was about to happen. It wasn't like we're going to deliver this 39-weeker. And so it was a very emotional experience because I was like, am I going to get to see my child? Or are they just going to have to like rush it off to the NICU? So there was like so much unknown, which I do understand that can happen in any delivery. Mm-hmm. But it was just being apart from my family already 10 days, like it was just a very emotional hospital stay because of COVID, so like couldn't have visitors. But it ended up being fine until recovery hit. I had a nerve entrapment.
Wait, you have to tell them the good things. The delivery went well.
Oh, it was great. And like, so they were saying in the scan that the baby was going to be like 4 or 5. No, Emma came out. She was 5'7" and feisty. And so like, Bethany, I remember distinctly, because Chris also not doing well, dude's green. He was green because I also chose the low drape because I wanted to be a part of the situation. And Bethany leans over to me and she says, Nick, you just left. Oh my gosh, I'm getting emotional because like that moment was so empowering because I was like, you know, when you're in that situation and you don't know what's going to happen and then NICU leaves and you get to keep your child, like it was just, it was a huge relief. And so at that point I was like, woo, okay. And so this time I also have had hyperemesis. I also have IUGR. So we have a planned section because of the increased risk of trying to VBAC. And I just don't feel like the risks are worth it to me versus like, let's have the calmest situation possible where I don't end up in an emergency situation, like distressing the infant because it's so small. And so I have a C-section that's planned and I feel like it's going to go a lot better for at least maybe because I've prepped my mind this entire time for that exact same scenario to happen to me again. But those were the good things. So I got to keep my child. She was super healthy. She was a preemie, obviously, so she was itty bitty tiny. Mm-hmm. And we had to stay an extra day because she failed her little car seat test. But like, she's killing it, and she's 2.5 now and about to be a big sister.
So one thing that you kind of alluded to there, obviously you're like perfectly flat, but that kind of means you can't see what's happening
right
in there. So like having someone to be able to say like, I see this, or you know, whatever's helpful. And like Oakley needed a bit of help. Choking a little bit. And so like that was like, I like Steven, you know, was there with me and he was like, I think he has to get a little bit of oxygen, you know.
Yeah,
you know, so it's like kind of helpful because you just can't see everything, nor can you move your arms or strap.
Right, they're strapped down.
Not tight. Like you could break it if you wanted, but they really just want to keep everything in the surgical field clean.
Sterile,
without
sure.
you risking reaching or, you know, something like that. So
yeah.
But your OR was fun.
Yeah, I mean, it had so many people.
It was like exciting. Yeah. You know, obviously when we found out the outcome was good because we didn't know.
Right, and everybody's like crying and screaming.
A lot of people in there that like cared about you.
Oh, for sure.
You know.
And it'll be the same experience again because like my infusion nurses who've kept me alive this entire time were like, oh, we will be in there.
Yeah.
Like just all the things. And I think Chris will be a lot less stressed this time around because he's, you know, my husband is not medical like Bethany's is. And so a medical experience in surgery just is not Chris Travis's, like, cup of tea. Like, he just doesn't, that's not what he does for a living.
Which I feel like is, maybe not most people, but, like, a whole lot of people.
Right.
It is, I mean, it is scary to watch someone that you love be cut into,
you know, away. Like your insides.
And then you see a baby and you don't actually know if that's normal,
right?
Like, when they come out, you're like, wait, is the baby good? Like, no one's talking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of just, like, feelings and things that can happen in there. And then post-op, you had some complications,
post-op,
if you will.
I had some complications. I also did the quick walking protocol. It took a little longer for the feeling in my legs to return, but I also got up fast. Then, like, I wasn't in bed for a whole 24 hours. I did, like, the 12, and it might have taken, like, 15 hours for my feeling to return. But I had a nerve entrapment, which is not super common in C-sections, but, you know, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen to you, girl, over here. Mm-hmm. And so, remember, it was COVID, and so I had to, like, they snuck Bethany into my room, and she started working, like, fascially on my abdomen because they didn't know what was happening. And so, we quickly figured out, like, compression was the way to go, and I could move if somebody was helping me compress that spot. Because it wasn't actually my incision. It was above, which was so weird.
Right. So, like, they were thinking about keeping you another day in the hospital because you were having so much pain you couldn't get up.
Yeah.
Which, obviously, you can't go home if you can't get
right,
up.
Right, exactly.
And so, I was able to get in. And basically, we figured out, okay, compression helps. It's something with the fascia.
Yeah.
And she got to where you were at least mobile.
That
so
was
it didn't
mobile,
take
yeah.
away all of your pain, but
right.
you figured out a way to be able
right.
to have tolerable pain to, so that you could move.
So I could move. And so I got to go home. Probably, I think we had to stay like 3 days because Emma was a preemie and they just require more like hand, or not hand notice, or just like more observation is the word I'm looking for. But this time I just know more what to expect of, like, I'm going into the OR.
The headspace is
the
a little
headspace
bit better.
Is different. Like, it's not a shocking situation. Like, I already know I have IUGR. I already know that my fluid right now is okay. It could change in a week, but, like, it's just different. Like, I feel like when you're prepped for things, like, I think anybody who's pregnant the first time, like, birth is just so scary because you're like, there's so much unknown. You don't know what's about to happen.
Right.
You don't know if you're going to have a baby vaginally. You don't know if you're tearing. You don't know. There's so much
unknown.
And
what's online is usually traumatic stories.
So
like,
traumatic.
There aren't very many people that post a beautiful birth story.
No.
You know, they might have them. I think plenty of people have them. But they're just not shared as much as, like, the traumatic ones are.
And I also think society, what I hate about the taboo around sections is that they call them, like, that's not natural birth. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what y'all know, because, like, I was cut open and a baby was taken from my abdomen.
Right.
I had a whole birth experience.
Right.
Like, just because I didn't push a baby out of my vagina doesn't mean I didn't have a birth. Like, what?
Right. And I've had plenty of patients that really have, like, a hard time with other people's opinions about their delivery, like, well, my mom was able to do it, so she thinks something went wrong, or they think their doctor was making quick cuts. And honestly, there are
physicians who do that. But
sometimes,
like,
that happens. But I do think that a lot more women and babies are surviving childbirth because we have another option,
right?
Besides just a vaginal delivery,
right?
And we know sometimes poor decisions are made, and maybe cesareans happened that hopefully. Or that shouldn't have, you know, or hopefully wouldn't in a different scenario. But I also feel like sometimes when people process their birth afterward, any of their feelings are valid. I feel like sometimes those people get the blame, or someone will step in and say, well, that shouldn't have happened if your doctor would have done this. But their doctor wasn't there making that decision.
Exactly.
Or that person wasn't there making those decisions and accepting the consequence of those decisions too. And so I feel like it comes down to, like, the birth prep that you put in and also your trust in your medical team, because things can go wrong and they could go wrong fast.
Right.
And it's way more helpful to trust your team and their decisions.
Yeah.
Obviously, mine wasn't fast. We had a long time to think about it and plan it out. Yours was a bit more fast, but it still wasn't like we're pushing, something's going south.
Yeah,
let's roll. And that's hard too. And I still think no matter what, no one should be saying, well, at least we got a healthy mom and a healthy baby, because those things do matter, but they're not the only things that matter.
Exactly.
So here we are telling you our cesarean stories, and mine was kind of ideal, and Beth Ann's wasn't ideal, but still not terrible.
Right.
And she already knows things that she would want to change for this time. Right. And then, you know, post-op, obviously, I think we've talked about it maybe on the podcast, if not definitely on social media. Scar tissue work is super helpful post-cesarean. But also, we know that more people have pain with sex after a cesarean than a vaginal delivery. So we work on that in pelvic floor therapy too. And if I'm prepping someone for a section, I kind of tell them their options, but also teach them how to get into and out of bed.
Yeah, I think log rolling into and out of bed and like getting up from, even from the toilet, just simple things like that. Like if you cough, like here's a pillow. If you have all these situations, because like we can also do C-section birth prep. Like if you come in and you know you're having a C-section, like we can work with you too so that we know, hey, this is how you're going to get out of bed. I think a key also in the hospital is like laying flat too.
Yes.
Like, because the fascia can stay that, like stay in a more flattened position versus like, I know that we don't always want to be flat clearly, but like, but a substantial amount of time, like lying down is very helpful.
Yeah. So like I put on Facebook when I knew I was having a section, like professionally, I know what I'm doing here, but from personal experiences, people that had C-section, what are your best tips? And overwhelmingly, people were like, get a recliner to sleep in. And I was like, no, right? Because the people that I've helped after a C-section, they always have so much pain and their scar shortened. Like, we have to like desensitize and stretch it out. And so, you know, I just wish more people knew that. Like, lie all the way flat and roll to your side and push up with your hands to get up. Because then your scar is healing, lengthened. And also you're not having to use your abs to get up. I think that's why they're saying recline. Like, you're already part way up.
You can
get
up. Yeah,
but
yeah.
You just want to roll to your side to push up. Not grab someone's hand because that brings in all of your abdomen that was like just cut.
You're right.
But there's a lot of things you could do to make it the best it could be, right? Traumatic or not, if you're prepped for, okay, I'm going to know how to get out of bed. I know how to take care of my scar.
Yep.
That's definitely more helpful.
For sure. I think a good tip is also silicone scar sheets. And you can get them on Amazon. You can get them at Walgreens, Target. A lot of people have them. And they're gonna come in like a larger rectangular adhesive. But you can cut them and you start them around day 10 or whenever your incision is fully closed. Not closed.
Closed. Not nude.
Not nude. Closed. And you cut them the length of the incision. And a lot of times they can just stay on. Depending on what brand you get, they can just stay on. You can shower with them. But it does get a little sore as a forewarning because it's breaking down the scar tissue. Mm-hmm. But it also really helps your scar heal a lot faster.
Yeah, and we've known about silicone for scars since the 80s.
Right.
Mostly the evidence is on breast scars. But we know about abdominal scars, not just cesarean, but just abdominal in general. It can affect bowel movements. Yep. It can affect future fertility. It's only small percentages there, but it's like, you know, if you're planning on having more kids, let's let that not be an issue.
Yeah.
Also, no one wants to walk around in pain. So if you can fix it, let's fix it.
And scar tissue also is the main reason people have pain with sex after cesareans, because they think like, oh, just because something didn't come out of my vagina doesn't mean like, no, you're actually at more risk to have pain with sex after a C-section than you are a vaginal delivery.
Right. So anyway, here we are saying we're thankful cesareans are an option.
Yes.
Some are more traumatic than others, and that definitely is going to affect the healing. But if you know you're having one, there's things you could do to prep for it. And if you're doing birth prep in general and only planning for vaginal, sometimes it is helpful to have a mental space where you're like, okay, if I had to have a scenario where I have a C-section, these are my choices that I have. But also respecting patients' boundaries. If they absolutely don't want to go there, they just want to keep their mind focused on a vaginal, like, okay, but make sure you have your team, right? That you trust. That way, if something emergent happened, you have them at least that have been to that space, know your preferences or whatever.
Right, so, for sure. Well, we'll update you. In 20 days, I'll be having another C-section, and we'll come back on the podcast after I deliver and talk about my newer experience.
Yeah.
But until then, if you have any questions, feel free to DM us as always. But for now, we're out.